I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Nathan Collins. He is a recent Omidyar Fellow at the Santa Fe Institute, and he is going to be introducing Blade Runner. It's part of the Science on Screen series. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for having me.
So why did you choose Blade Runner? They're giving scientists at SFI a chance to choose science or science fiction, whatever movies. Why'd you choose this?
So I have a little confession to make. So I'm a political scientist by training, and it's actually really hard to find a film about politics that kind of really tells the truth about politics from the point of view of a political scientist. So you get films like All the President's Men, something like that, that's about politics, but it's hard to talk about as in terms of the science of studying politics. So partly I just love the movie Blade Runner. Partly, it's a great exploration of human psychology and sort of how people think, how people make decisions, how people ultimately make really important choices. So I thought it was just, you know, partly it was sort of a challenge to myself to think about the film in that way and to try to get the audience to think about politics in a different way, to get them not to focus on what you see in the Washington Post every day, but to really get into the mind of voters and think about how we think about politics.
It's interesting because, I mean, when you talk about what the facts are, what political facts are, sometimes you can tell the truth more in a novel or a movie than you can in a description of real life. And this is yet another level removed because it's not even about Washington or politics or voting or candidates.
Right.
I mean, when you look at this movie, how do you see it as a political movie?
Well, it's not that I see this as a political movie. It's that I see politics as fundamentally about psychology and about human interaction. This sets me apart from some political scientists who, even people who study what's called political psychology, really view politics as somehow a separate part of human behavior. From my point of view, we're human beings. We make choices. We make decisions. That comes from our psychology. And politics is just one avenue, one area in which we make those kinds of decisions. So what I wanted to focus on with Blade Runner is basically to get people to think about human psychology and then, you know, in the context of a movie that's very much about choice, very much about making distinctions, fine distinctions between different kinds of entities, in this case between the replicants, the sort of android characters in the movie, and humans. So, yeah, I mean, really what I'm trying to do is get people to step back from what you see in the newspaper, what we generally perceive of as politics, and think about how do people perceive the world and how does that affect politics. In my own research, what I've essentially found is that if you want to understand how people make decisions, you shouldn't be looking to what's going on in the day-to-day of politics. You should be looking towards psychology. So I'll save it as a little bit of a teaser for tonight, but essentially what I'm going to argue is that the particular kinds of decisions that the protagonist Deckard in Blade Runner has to make about the other characters, about the Rachel character played by Sean Young, about Roy Batty who's played by Rutger Hauer, the decisions he has to make and the things he has to figure out actually have a lot to do with the kinds of decisions that people make in politics, the kinds of decisions that voters make in politics. And I'll be a little bit coy about exactly what that is.
Okay, so we'll leave that, and people can come tonight. And I mean, you're going to introduce the film, and then people will watch it, and then there will be a Q&A afterwards. So
yeah, that's right.
We can really get into it at that point.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, the other thing about this is that I just think this is a great movie. It's a flawed movie, but it's a great movie, and I just really want to show this movie.
You just want to see it again.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many, it's funny, because it's one of those films that people love it or they hate it, and
yeah.
I have to say, because I put some comments about it on Facebook last night, and I got comments back that were basically kind of along gender lines, and I wonder if it's more of a guy movie than...
It's entirely possible. One of the things that I think is a little odd about it, a little bit flawed about it, is that it is very much in the tradition of film noir from the 1940s. And there is a certain extent to which it falls into the gender stereotypes of the 1940s in the relationship between Harrison Ford and Sean Young's characters. You know, and it is a little weird that way. I mean, it's also, it's directed by Ridley Scott, who's known, of course, for movies like Aliens. Alien is the
Alien,
first
yeah.
one. Yeah. And, you know, it's an action film at times. About the last I don't know, 20, 25 minutes is just an extended action sequence, and there's a great deal of action in the middle. And I'm, you know, I don't know, I guess in, I'll be a little traditional now, fall into the stereotype. Maybe that's something that doesn't appeal to some women. But, I mean, for my part, I don't know, I don't know, did you actually find that it kind of fell along gender lines in the comments?
Not enough people commented to really have sufficient data to draw any conclusions, but I was watching it, and I thought, what is it that people love about this? Because I'm not loving it.
Okay.
I'm watching it, I'm feeling what feels a kind of like 80s noir, and if there is one more flashing light through a, you know, rotating fan or striated lines, and I mean, basically that, it's a kind of hard-edged 80s noir dystopian dirty ugliness that
very
is an aesthetic.
So.
And as I was watching, I thought, okay, maybe this is kind of the first example, 1982, and a lot of people then followed suit and followed that style in subsequent movies. And so I can't fault it for being a cliche of that, because maybe it was the first one who did it.
Right, and certainly it occupies an interesting place in film history, I think, because it very much is in the tradition of sort of the 1930s and 1940s German directors who started in Germany, came to Hollywood, really created that, like you were saying, the lights through fans and the striated kind of lighting, and, you know, this what became known as the expressionist style, which was more than just film, and had, you know, good points and very very dark points, and like in the films of Leni Riefenstahl, but had these really high points in terms of you know, Fritz Lang, especially thinking about films like M, for example. And then I think it was hugely influential. If you look at the 1980s, some of the films that came out then, you look at the work of Michael Mann, which wasn't science fiction, but had some of those same kinds of influences. And then I was watching it yesterday, and I was really struck by how The Matrix sort of looked a lot like Blade Runner in a lot of the sequences. There are these scenes with these sort of cars floating around in Blade Runner with searchlights everywhere, and that's a sort of image that you see in other subsequent science fiction
films.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
So, yeah, I mean, it is certainly a film that divides people. I think some people, and actually, you know, film noir is something that divides people. Some people think it's the greatest thing ever. I happen to be a huge fan of it. I really love the films of Sam Fuller, for example. I'll just get a little plug in for Pick Up on South Street. It's one of my favorite noir films of all time. And, you know, for me, I came to be interested in film very much because of the aesthetic. And it was only later that I started to understand more about, you know, visual grammar and about the symbolism that films use. And I think in looking back at Ridley Scott's film, you know, like I say, it is flawed. It isn't always in control of its religious symbolism, for example. Some of the characters are sort of kind of holes in them. It definitely falls into some stereotypes at times. But certainly as a visual film, it does, I think, brilliantly create this aesthetic of a not post-apocalyptic, but sort of dystopian Los Angeles of, well, in the film, I think it's 2019.
Yeah.
Seven years from now. I live in L.A., actually, so I'm like, oh, is that our future? But
well, and I was thinking this would be a fun film to watch in 2019.
It really
just
would
as
be.
We all watched 2001 in 2001.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I think some of the themes that, and I was thinking if somebody, because at first I didn't know that you were a political scientist. I was like, oh, this is about what's the border between human and non-human.
I think the film is really about that, but I think that it creates this interesting space where you can talk about psychology, right? So one of the things that I'll give a little spoiler, one of the things I'm going to talk about is the way that we use cues, little small pieces of information to make decisions. So one of the concepts in the film is the Voight-Kampff test, which is this series of questions and observations of a person, a human or a replicant.
It's just a made-up test.
It's a made-up test. This is not a real thing. Yeah. This is designed to detect replicants, and so far as we know, there aren't actual replicants running around.
Right, as far as we know.
That we hope. Or at least we hope they're nice if they are running around. And the whole purpose of the test is to elicit certain responses, elicit certain cues that would be kind of a hint that somebody isn't human. Now, that seems like that should have nothing to do with politics at all, nothing to do with actual existence. In fact, it has everything to do with politics, with all of human behavior. Because, in essence, what's the question? The question is, what kind of person are you, right? Are you a human or are you a replicant? And here I'm using person in a broad sense so that I include androids. Now, obviously, we're not normally thinking about whether someone's a human or not, but we are constantly making evaluations of people, and we're basing those on the few cues that we have. And often we have to make fine distinctions. One of the themes in Blade Runner is that as the replicant technology has evolved, it's become harder and harder to tell the difference. So what do they have to do? They have to rely on this expert Blade Runner, this expert cop who knows how to ferret these people out. And it turns out to be very difficult for him. But he is able to pick up on the few cues. One particularly interesting scene, it's fairly early in the movie, when Harrison Ford's character meets Rachel, Sean Young's character. And Rachel asks Deckard if he's ever killed a human by mistake. And he says no. But one of the things that's interesting in politics is that people very often do make mistakes about politics. And it's because they rely on very basic cues. Now, Deckard's very good at his job. Early on in the movie, there's a Blade Runner that's not as good at his job, and he's shot by a replicant. This actually, you know, people don't normally get shot, but in politics, people's perceptions of political candidates depend on these cues, and people do make wrong inferences.
Well, what you're saying leads to the kinds of questions that people ask, and it's two different questions. Is this person one of us?
Yes, exactly.
And is this person on our side?
Very much so, right. And that's, I think, that's the key distinction. You're almost helping me prepare my presentation. It's very much about, is this one of us? Is this person on our side? And we do pick up on little cues. And I know, so in my personal life, I used to wear bow ties a lot. And I would meet people and they would assume I was a Republican because I wore bow ties a lot.
Right.
And I'm not. No offense to my Republican friends, but I'm not. And, you know, there's lots of little things like that. If you, for example, if you say that you're pro-choice, you're probably a Democrat. If you say you're pro-life, you're probably a Republican. And the interesting thing comes in when people make those inferences and they're wrong. So, you know, thinking back to Arlen Specter, he's a great example of this. He really wasn't very conservative, but did use some kind of more conservative terminology to talk about himself while he was still a Republican, at least. And a lot of people looked at him and said, well, he's a Republican, therefore he believes XYZ. We think he's probably not, you know, pro-choice. And of course, he was. This sort of thing really pervades our psychology, and it pervades most people's perceptions of politics. And it's the people that have a lot of experience with politics who are able to realize, for example, just because Ted Kennedy was Catholic didn't mean he was, you know, pro-life. He was pro-choice.
Right.
But a lot of people actually thought he was pro-choice.
Well, Nathan Collins is just finishing as an Omidyar Fellow at the Santa Fe Institute, and he will be introducing Blade Runner, and it's the final cut of all
the
many
cuts
of Blade Runner that have been made.
It's the actual director's cut, but there was already a director's cut.
There was already a director's cut.
So they called it the final cut.
One critic who didn't like the film and who was accused of having bad taste for not liking the film said, if it's such a great film, why do they keep tinkering with it?
Well, there's a long story. Maybe I'll talk about that too.
Okay. Well, anyway, Science on the Screen, Blade Runner, Nathan Collins, thank you for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.